Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Ah, the Bills running away now.
You're listening to the best of the Bills.
Touchdown, the first play from scrimmage.
A weekly mix of WGR 550's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
It's all Bills all day. Buffalo Bills Football Monday on the home of the Bills. WGR Sports Radio 550. Brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
They throw a quick hitter to Coleman, who catches it over the head of Woolen for a touchdown. Smith under center. Trips as he drops from center and he's sacked. Sacked on the play by Greg Rousseau. It's a turnover on downs for Buffalo. Pocket collapsing. Allen's going to step up. He fumbled the football. It's loose, but Ty Johnson hops on it, and it's a first down. Steps up in the pocket. Throws. Has Kincaid lunging into the end zone for the touchdown. Hand off to Cook, going to try to bounce it outside. It's a race to the pylon, and he's in for a two-yard touchdown run. Hand off goes to Cook right up the gut and into the end zone for his second rushing touchdown of the game. Another blitz coming and has to get rid of it, and it's intercepted. It's picked off. Austin Johnson with the INT.
You're listening to Jeremy and Joe on the home of the Bills, WGR Sports Radio 550.
Smells like Victory Monday. Buffalo Bills Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. Bills 6-2, division, not even a race. Bills looking behind them. Get out the binoculars. Where are the Jets? Where are the Dolphins? Where are the Patriots? And the Dolphins come to town this week. Joining us on the Wester Hotline, he's back from Seattle after the trip out west, Sal Capaccio, who was on the sidelines there at Lumen Field. Sal, good morning. Welcome back. I'm tired, I'd imagine. Late arrival, huh?
Yeah, well, it's got a little sleep on the plane. That is the advantage of a longer flight. At least you can try to sleep, you know. But the night games, the primetime games that are in the east on the East Coast, you can't really do that on the plane as much because it's a shorter flight. It's just a really late night. At least I was able to do that. But I wrote arrow up, arrow down. As I said and tweeted after I wrote it, you just have to move 10 yards before you read it because a flag was thrown on you. So you have to be careful about that.
Yeah.
A lot of flags last night. Yeah, it was a late night. I mean, but you know what? A one where you wake up and, like you said, you look at the standings and this is a time, Jeremy, where I wish the New York Times playoff machine or the ESPN playoff machine was operating this early because, I mean, I'm not being facetious. We all know it. We all see it. This is not some funny remark. They could win this division in the next month. It's unbelievable.
Yeah, when is, we were just asking Sal, they could officially do it probably within a couple weeks.
I don't know.
Think,
you tell
right?
me. Have you figured it out? Does anybody know
no,
it yet?
I don't know.
What's
like,
that?
I don't know officially, but I mean, you look at this week even, not to jump ahead too far here, but the Jets, who just lost to New England, now play the Texans on Thursday Night Football, and the Bills are going to be favored, I think, by a touchdown against the Dolphins. So, I mean, it's very possible that they open up like a 4.5 game lead or this early on. And that is so, man, I was not a big fan of their competition in this division going into the year, but could anybody have dreamed up that it would feel over this quickly?
No, there's no way. I mean, even if you thought the Bills could be 6-2, when the schedule came out, let's remember this, guys. The schedule comes out, Howard does pick the Bills, we all talk about what the schedule looks like, and we all thought, boy, they got a pretty tough stretch to start. After the first 8 games, if I said, I think what I did say was, man, you'd love to go 6-2, but I don't know if that's realistic with this schedule. 5-3, you'll take. Well, here they are sitting at 6-2. But I think what really happened here was the Jets and the Dolphins, and I know Tua and all that, but where they are, no one anticipated. Even if you thought the Bills could get to six, there's no way you would have thought that. I did the research a couple weeks ago. The earliest a team has ever clinched the division in the NFL was after week 11.
Okay.
The last time it happened was the Patriots' undefeated season when they came here on Sunday night and torched the Bills. Remember that?
Yeah.
That game was flexed in 2007. That game clinched the division for them that year. That's the earliest, and it's happened like two or three other times with other teams after week 11. That's the last time, but it's the earliest a team has ever done it.
Okay.
Well, we'll see. Tell it was a pretty good day for the Bills. It was also a pretty bad day for the Seahawks. I mean, I think any Bills fan would say, wow. The Bills were very good in this game, but everything that could go wrong for Seattle went wrong. They shot themselves in the foot left and right.
Did you also sell the stuff that happened on the field, get to that, and then you're on the Bills sideline, so would you have not known until maybe even after the game that the Seahawks were like fighting each other on their own sideline?
I knew it because Chris and Eric talked about it from they saw it from their radio booth, right? Because they're on that side and they could see it. And then, so I knew what was happening over there. I didn't see it myself. But what was interesting is we talked with Deion Dawkins about it in the locker room. And what I didn't realize, Tim Graham of The Athletic actually asked Deion and brought it up. And when he asked the question, I didn't realize that Deion was like getting in the middle of it in a peaceful manner. And he admitted, it's incredible. If you guys check it out, like there's some quotes from Deion that I know that Tim might have put in a story, but Deion basically said, like, yeah, we're all trying to out here playing football, and like, you know, it gets to a point where he basically said, like, he was telling teammates, you guys cool it with each other, like you're supposed to be teammates, you know what I mean? And then like they go to the sidelines, they start fighting again, so it unraveled quickly, obviously, for the Seattle Seahawks, and no doubt about it. I mean, the high snap early on, and then the botched fourth down play. Who knows how the game turns any other way, because we all know that those could be just critical moments and they shift the shape of the game. But I just felt, other than maybe what, about 6-7 minutes in the second quarter, the Bills completely controlled this game in every aspect.
Yeah. On those plays, if I could just get in real quick on those plays, yeah. Sal, like those are lucky plays, but how many times did the Bills stop the Seahawks before that at the goal line? And that's something they've been doing kind of all year. They did it in the Jet game, right, where they'll get down to first and goal situations and their defense holds strong.
Yeah, and how, can we go back to the interception Josh threw? And how about him getting involved to tackle the defender before he gets to the end zone becomes a huge play that he makes. It wasn't just him, but Josh gets in on the tackle. If he doesn't, maybe he scores because Josh is there. And, you know, look, I mean, we've had this debate. I remember years ago having big debates with people about whether or not the quarterback should ever try to make a tackle on an interception. And we could have that debate. That's fine. And you never know. Like, if he gets hurt, we're probably having that debate today. Thankfully, he wasn't. But he stopped him. He helped stop him. And they, because of that, that leads to the Bills stopping them on that situation. You're right, though. And I actually have, real quick, I'm going to bring this up to you. I have a goal to go. Here we go. So goal to go situations this year. Bills defense, actually, they're not ranked. Oh, they're 11th in the league. The other team has had 64%. Of a conversion rate on goal-to-go situations. Red zone, though, the Bills are excellent in the red zone this year, too. They're fourth in the league now, 43, and they were great again yesterday, 1-for-3 only for the Seahawks. That's the big thing. The Bills have been just so good in the red zone all year.
Sal Capaccio, you can read his Arrow Up, Arrow Down column at our website, WGR550.com. The only arrow down that was a Bills player was one punt being fielded in the first quarter, Sal.
I mean, I stretched, guys. I was going to reach out to people and go, who do I put for an arrow down? I mean, the only thing I could think of was Brandon Codrington fielding that punt at his goal line, and that actually cost them field position where they had to punt on that drive.
That's it. The other one is penalties, because it's the second time this season a Bills game has the most penalties in the NFL.
Yeah, and I mean, I think watching the game from our vantage point, maybe you saw this, there were a lot of ticky-tack calls, but there's also the, hey, you got to be better than that. You have to understand, you can't hold, you know, the pre-snap penalties we always know are non-negotiable, right? I mean, so I think this is from a coaching perspective, I'm sure Sean McDermott will absolutely address it, but he's had to address it a couple times this year. You have to be better with your technique, and it's a loud environment, and when you're on offense, holding, When that happens because you got beat, maybe the guy got a better get off. Like, that's what happens when you get beat and your technique fails you or you have a false start. That's happened as well. Then there's the other kind and the other variety of, I mean, Keon Coleman's blocking his man into the bench, right? I mean, look, you love the physicality and you don't ever want to get a penalty for, you know, necessarily going over the line. But at the same time, do you want to take the physicality away from Keon Coleman, a rookie who's really blocking in the run game? Deion Dawkins, by the way, you guys know, speaking of him, you guys know how sometimes we call it certain games, like, I don't know, the Fitzpatrick game or the whatever game, right?
Yep.
Deion Dawkins called it the bench game. He said it's the bench game because of what Keon Coleman did. He said, I don't care. He told him, you stay there. That's what you keep doing because that's what you want to see from him.
Coleman, one of your players, to get an arrow up. And Sal, you know, when the Bills drafted Coleman, there was a lot of, well, it's going to take a team using him in the right way. And the way that it's come along, I feel like the Bills are finding that. They're using him in the right way. And that's in part because there are other options out there taking some attention. And Coleman, when he gets one-on-one, he has been a ball winner. He has been a bully. He's been tough to bring down. He's very quick to turn up field. Like, the yak skills are there. A guy that can win a jump ball. A guy that can take a screen pass. Like, right now, Keon Coleman's looking like he's a pretty good draft pick for the Buffalo Bills.
Looking like a complete wide receiver, right? I mean, that's really what he's looking at. Now you throw in the blocking aspect, too. You're right. He's never going to be the burner that runs straight down the field past everybody. But he's exactly what we talked about in training camp. I just feel really good about how we analyzed his game in training camp because we would talk every day, guys, about he makes plays that other people can't in different ways. He's not going to run by you, but he gets separation above the rim. He gets separation with his body control, and he makes wild plays once, at least once a practice. He's making a wild play once a game now. And what I love is the Bills are just trusting him more and more. He's getting better and better every week. And I'm going to give you another example. Now, the highlight, of course, the play of the day for him and maybe the team was the catch, which was unbelievable. And look at the body control there, right? I mean, he goes up and grabs it with one hand, and it's nothing for him to come down and put both feet down, never even go to the ground, much less drop the ball. But a play that's not going to show up on the stat sheet, later in the game, he drew a pass interference. Josh wanted to go deep. I don't know if you guys remember this play. And I was actually, he was kind of coming at me. For some reason, I was kind of focused on him on that play. His release is what caused the pass interference. Because his release was so good, the corner, who I don't remember, maybe it was Woolen, I don't remember, had to grab him.
It was, yeah.
Isn't that the area where people said that's got to get better. It's not very good. He's getting better every week. That's a great example. That's not going to show up in a stat sheet. His release was so good, the corner got beat, he had to grab him. His technique, he's like, heck with it, I got to grab him, causes the pass interference, which causes the Bills to get the ball down the field.
Yeah, there were so many good moments. That was one of them. It was Woolen. He shook Woolen at the line of scrimmage to draw that. There was another one where I think it was Woolen again, where he pointed at him before the snap. He pancake blocked him and then pointed at him while he was on the ground. He had a day. And he doesn't even lead the Bills in receiving, Sal. I mean, if there was any question before about, hey, is Khalil Shakir still battling with an ankle injury? Maybe he still is, but he certainly doesn't look like it.
Khalil Shakir is just becoming, and he has been, right, just one of the most reliable. I mean, statistically, he is the most reliable pass catcher in the league. Another 10 targets, 9 catches, I think it was, total. His catch percentage is just unbelievable. And every time they want to throw him the ball, it seems like he's going to be there, he's going to be available, and they get it to him in different ways. Again, not a guy that just runs past everybody, but he is the prototypical kind of receiver you want in today's NFL, where so many teams are playing that cover two shell. And what did we hear from the Bills going back to March? And this is what, look, let's marry what we heard back in March. Back in March and April or whenever, when the Bills talked, I remember at the owners' meetings and Sean McDermott saying, hey, you got these teams are playing these two high shells now. You got to have a way to get the ball down the field by getting it to your playmakers and letting them run with the ball, you know, underneath the rack. And now I'm thinking they had a plan for this to be Khalil Shakir. That's what this is. This is coming to fruition now. This is the way they wanted to use him. Like, it's exactly how they planned it. And now you add in the fact that Amari Cooper is there. And Amari Cooper had one catch, right? One catch for 3 yards. And yet, I still think he made an impact on the game. Because look around, guys. You had Dawson Knox open for 50 yards in this game. First play of the game. Dalton Kincaid gets involved. James Cook gets involved in the passing game. Obviously, Shakir and Keon Coleman. Even though Amari Cooper had one catch for 3 yards, he made an impact by being on the field because you have to account for him. The one play obviously didn't go the Bills' way, was targeted to Amari Cooper. I went back and rewatched. I don't know if you guys have talked about it. He slipped on the break. And on the field, the interception, on the field, I even thought when Josh threw it, as the ball's in the air, I'm like, boy, he just kind of floated that. It was really weird. Like, he didn't throw a normal Josh fastball at all. And now when I go back and watch, I understand why. I think what happened was he saw Amari Cooper slip, and I think he tried to hold back on the throw, and it was too late, and his arm was already going there. So just a tough break. It's going to happen. And, you know, he threw his first interception of the year.
James Cook over 100 yards rushing, Sal. And I was joking with Joe earlier that, you know, when he powers through that one Seattle player and knocks his helmet off, I was joking that when the Bills get in close, sometimes Allen will take the ball in. And he also might have checked to those two throws to Coleman. So, you know, Cook wanted to finish the job there. He ran really well in this game, over 100 yards on just 17 carries. So sometimes the run game works really well. And sometimes it's Ray Davis. Sometimes it's James Cook.
I love James Cook's game yesterday. I thought James Cook was what I would say the best version of James Cook yesterday. When James Cook bounces to different holes that aren't there and just keeps moving forward while he's doing it, that's the best version of James Cook. He's really great at subtly shifting his body to get into a position to gain extra yards. We talked a couple weeks ago about Ray Davis always falling forward. Well, listen, James Cook, when he's always going forward, when he's moving his body in and out of little seams, that's when he's the best version of himself, and then he gets involved in the passing game as well. Talking with some offensive linemen, again, I'll go to Deion, because Deion talked a lot yesterday after the game. We asked him about James, and you know what Deion said? He said, James Cook listened to his line all week. Like, what do you mean, Deion? He said, we were telling him all week, this is where this one's going to hit. This is where this one's going to hit. He said, during the game, we would tell him in the huddle, or he would give us, there would be something on the break, like after the huddle, he said, David Edwards would give him a signal. This is where it's going to hit. This is where it's going to hit. That's great coaching. That's great coaching by Aaron Cromer, as the offensive line coach. That's great coaching by the offensive line to let their running back know, and James Cook listen. And I'm going to throw this in there. This is not said in a, like, to be demeaning in any way. It's actually kind of funny. James Cook is so much all business. I don't see him smile a ton. Like, he's just like a guy that's always kind of all business, right? He does sometimes. Guys, he was having fun yesterday. I noticed, like, when he came back to the sidelines after scoring, like, he was just, it was joyful for him. The expressions on his face, smiling and laughing with his teammates, it was awesome to see. He was really feeling it yesterday.
How about the Bills defensively, Sal? We had a caller ask if the Seahawks were just bad running it or if the Bills kind of shored up some of their own issues they've had in games in the past. This is a team that had given up a lot of explosive runs, almost 5 yards a carry. Of course, the Baltimore game stands out. But Seattle did nothing in the run game on Sunday.
Yeah, it's a good question. Like, I think that Seattle, if I'm doing radio in Seattle this morning, I'm probably telling you that they abandoned the run game a little too soon. They do throw too much anyway. It's a team that has a good running back, but yet they throw the ball all the time. And, you know, this game was still tight in the second quarter into the third quarter, and they probably could have committed to it a little bit more, but give the Bills a lot of credit, of course. The reason is because they were just stopping them on early downs, creating long yard situation. You have to give the Bills credit for that. What I really liked was, boy, the Bills' secondary was making tackles yesterday. Taron Johnson, as he always does. Rasul Douglas right away on an early play in the game makes a big tackle for a loss, right? So I think that you have to give a lot of credit to the Bills' defense. They put them in tough situations that they couldn't run the ball anymore. They made them a little bit more one-dimensional. But, you know, the Seahawks helped them out a little bit. But, hey, that's just the effect of knowing you have a good defense on the other side. I think the linebackers did a nice job. Bill Inspector filling in, obviously, for Terrell Bernard. So, you know, hopefully they get Bernard back this week. But another game where you get a really good opportunity for, here's your one of your best players that goes down. Somebody gets a whole nother game under his belt to get those reps, and you come out with a 31-10 win. It's great.
Does it feel like Greg Rousseau is breaking out, and also because the sacks aren't there, it's just not going to happen when it comes to, like, reputation? Because I feel like every week, there's a couple plays yesterday where he just beats a tackle clean and makes an impact on a play, even when he's not getting the sack. Like, I feel like he might be the king right now of, you know, pressure rates and win rates and on run plays. There he is again yesterday. I felt like he was having a pretty easy time with that right tackle.
Yeah, he had two quarterback hits yesterday. I'm sorry, one quarterback hit, two tackles for loss out of the four tackles he had, two were for loss. And he batted two balls down in the very first series of the game, right? I mean, first play of the game, first play of the game, you guys saw him bat it down, right? And what they did was the Seahawks intentionally figured, okay, he's first play of the game, juices are flowing, adrenaline. This guy's going to bite on play action hard. We're going to run play action. He's going to come down line of scrimmage. We're just going to boot out where he was vacated, and it's going to be an easy play. Greg Rousseau was so under control, he didn't bite on play action. He saw it, he read it, and he just turns his body and he faces Geno Smith, who has nowhere to throw the ball. He's under control right now, and that's a great thing for a defensive end with his length to be able to do a lot of different things, his athleticism. He's not biting on play action. He's not going out of control. He's staying under control. And look, that's not going to result in all the sacks, but it's going to result in pressures, in quarterback hits, and being in the backfield and making an impact, and he did again yesterday.
Sal, before we wrap things up, let's make sure we get to the injury report, how the Bills came out of the game. The Barnes Firm injury report brought to you by the Barnes Firm. Injured, call 1-800-8-MILLION. How'd they come out?
Well, I mean, we had no official injuries on the sidelines yesterday, so I'm going to say really, really good until we hear something different from Sean McDermott. Let's hope that's not the case. It was a game, guys, where I did not have one single official injury report. I do not remember one player going into the blue medical tent yesterday. That's amazing, right? Here we are again. Can I be snarky again and say not a good week for the training staff stinks crowd again? You know, great job by the Bills overall yesterday in a 31-10 win. And it's even better when you can get your starters out of there, when you can get backups in, and you don't have injuries to talk about on Monday. So the only injuries we're going to be monitoring this week are the ones that are already in place, which is obviously we know Dwayne Carter's on IR. He can't play for the next few games. But Terrell Bernard and Curtis Samuel are the ones we're going to be monitoring this week, most of the week. That said, Von Miller comes back this week. Sorry, were you just going to say that?
Same thing, yeah. Go on.
Von Miller comes back this week. They will not have to make a roster move as it currently stands because when they put Dwayne Carter on IR, they did not sign anybody. So they have 52 on the roster now, so it should be very seamless for Von Miller to be reinstated this week. As long as he's reinstated, which you know is expected and should happen, he'll go right on the active roster.
All right. Thank you, Sal.
You got it, guys.
Sal Capaccio, the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show coming up. 10 o'clock.
Not only, by the way, Sal spoke on like the tackle Allen makes and the Bills offense makes inside the 10 to prevent the touchdown. Not only did that allow them to then get 0 points and get the stop, Allen keeps his no pick six streak alive. He is third all time now. 3,011 attempts without a pick six.
What's the record?
The record is Rodgers. He's like 700 behind Rodgers.
So next year.
Yeah, but he's 60 attempts behind Cunningham, who is second all-time.
Randall Cunningham?
Yeah.
Boy, the reports on Rodgers are he doesn't have it. He just doesn't have it. He can't move. He can't create.
Nope.
And that's a big problem.
Also, there's the Jets defense again. Not the same.
Right. A lot of reputation.
They had third and at the two-minute warning, Jacoby Brissett is in the game for the Patriots. They are still in their own territory. They're in their own 40-yard line. It is third and 10. Patriots at 3rd and 10 at their own 40, 2 minutes to go, down 5. Your Jets defense, you can't lose that football game. It's amazing they did. I love that they did. It's incredible they lost it. It's kind of reminiscent of last year, the Bills in Foxborough. Like what happened? You let Mac Jones go the length of the field? Who are you that you're letting Mac Jones do that? And that's what New England did. Jacoby Brissett went 60 yards in 2 minutes and had to score a touchdown. He did.
Chris Brown joins us when we return. We'll get his thoughts, his views on the game in Seattle. The Bills win in convincing fashion. It's Buffalo Bills Football Monday brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com.
Smith under center. Trips as he drops from center and he's sacked. Sacked on the play by Greg Rousseau. It's a turnover on downs for Buffalo. Disaster strikes the Seahawks again.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
He's as steady as they come. You know, he's been dealing with an ankle for the last couple weeks. Every week he seems like he's getting a little bit better and more comfortable and confident and cutting. Again, he just continues to make plays for us. And, you know, he's not the flashiest player. You're never going to see him be in the end zone and do something crazy. But he's just as consistent as they come. Love the guy. And he does whatever's asked for him.
Buffalo Bills quarterback Josh Allen there talking about wide receiver Khalil Shakir, who has been targeted 38 times this year. He's caught 36 passes. He has been phenomenal for the Bills up to this point. One of the better receivers in all of football. And when he is in, the Bills look like one of the most efficient offenses in the sport. And now with the ascension of Keon Coleman, the addition of Amari Cooper, and then also just having Dalton Kincaid and a good run game, the Bills offense the last 2 weeks has really taken off to where, I mean, they look like a threat against basically any other team, especially against a really lousy division, as the AFC East is just, it's the AFC East. This is the same thing in the Patriots dynasty. The Patriots were winning Super Bowls, but ultimately, I mean, it was over before it really even started, and it was kind of the same this time. The only difference has been the Bills haven't gotten as much of the benefit of the doubt because AFC East teams are actually still trying to win games, where for years it felt like they weren't. Now teams are actually trying. You know, the Jets sell their soul. Dolphins.
And it fails.
Dolphins have made some pretty darn good moves.
Yeah.
They are a solid football team, or for the last few years have been solid football teams. But, again, it's before Halloween, and it feels like, it's done.
So, obviously, the Jets are in the worst situation, right?
Yeah.
Who's the worst team?
New England.
You really think New England's still worse?
I think they have the worst talent, yeah. Okay. I think their offensive line is bad. I really don't know what they
have. They just beat the Jets.
They did, but I put that more like, I think Jets have really bad coaching. I think that team is also nearly quit. And then I think Sunday they did.
I was going to say the Jets, to be honest. I mean, sure, they have talent, but talent doesn't always just win you games. Like,
no.
Everyone has been characterizing them as a roster, not a team. They have Sauce Gardner, Garrett Wilson, now Devontae Adams, Aaron Rodgers, Quinnen Williams, all of these amazing players. Sauce Gardner, by the way, same amount of career interceptions as DeMar Hamlin.
Yeah, he's having a really bad year. It's not going great.
Bad year?
It's not going great.
He's had a bad past 2 years.
Well, in terms of picks, I mean, he doesn't get targeted as much. This year he's getting targeted a lot, and it's not going particularly well.
That is always the tough part about cornerbacks.
You have like one good year picks and then no one targets you ever again.
Tre'Davious White.
Trey had like a 7-pick season, then like I think his highest after that was like 3.
Yeah, and everyone was like, never throw to him again.
Don't do that.
But no, I look at the Jets though, and outside of those 5 guys, they don't have much. I'm not saying, you know.
We can't even name though like 3 guys for New England.
Cole Strange.
Well, there you go.
No. But it's fair. I think that you have to say the Patriots are the worst team.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't think the Jets are very far behind. I think it's...
They're probably not very far behind because, I mean, to be perfectly honest, I went from thinking, when Robert Saleh got fired, I was sort of thinking, all right, Woody Johnson's saying some pretty positive things though, about the Jets roster.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's a good chance that Joe Douglas keeps his job. I'm not sure about that anymore.
No.
I think it is going to be a complete...
Tear down,
restart the whole thing.
But
it's not a particularly good QB class, but they're going to be down there. They're going to be able to do something, I think.
Who do you think they go for?
I mean, it's going to be guys like Shedeur Sanders.
Because the Patriots don't need a quarterback.
No,
obviously.
Patriots don't need a quarterback, but I mean, the Raiders are going to.
Yeah, that's true. Who else is down there right now?
Well, we've got the Jets, Raiders. I brought up Cleveland. Probably going to want to get involved in that. Tennessee is even worse than all of them. They're 1-6.
Yeah.
And then just on the NFC side of things, the Giants, absolutely. Rams wouldn't be a bad idea to do so, and then Carolina.
Hmm.
I mean, the teams are going to need quarterbacks, and that's where it is going to be guys like Shedeur Sanders, Cam Ward.
Yeah.
But this is where you're going to get guys like overdrafted, like Quinn Ewers and Carson Beck.
Jalen Milroe, too.
Jalen Milroe, who, I mean, a few weeks ago we were like, okay, he's phenomenal. Now it's kind of reverted back to the last 2 years of, all right, not that great, actually.
I don't know. I look at the Jets, and I just think that,
so
with
nice.
How bad their situation is, I think you can have the conversation of saying they're the worst team in the AFC East. even below the Patriots. Because, well, yes, the Patriots don't have the talent level. They at least have a path forward. They have the young quarterback.
Oh, yeah.
They have
for this year,
new regime, I guess, if you want to call it that.
But that's what I've been saying. Like, for this year, the Patriots are the worst team. Long term, yeah. I think they are the biggest threat to the Bills. They have to get a lot of stuff right. Arguably perfect. But
yeah,
because ultimately, even this year too, their rookie receivers haven't been good. Jalen Polk can't get open, and when he does, he drops every pass. Yeah. Javon Baker barely can get on the field. You know, I mean, they're going to have to get a lot right. But May is going to cover up a lot of their issues. I think he is that talented. He did leave Sunday with a head injury. We'll see on that. But I think he is going to be that good.
I think their problem is they're only going to be able to draft. They're not going to be able to go out and say, hey, you know, Bill Belichick's here. Like they were able to do that early with Mac Jones.
But they will have cap space.
Right. But they were able to bring in people early on in Mac Jones because it was the mystique of New England.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Belichick.
And we're going to win a Super Bowl.
Yeah, right. But now you don't have that anymore. You have Gerard Mayo and Elliott Wolf.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
and Mayo did just call his team soft, which ultimately led them winning a game.
Yeah, right. Which is, hey, maybe that's effective.
Maybe it has no bearing on them. I'm just pointing it out.
They're one
they
of the worst.
Soft won a game.
They're one of the worst teams in the league, though. It's hard to tell like what that actually means to them.
Yeah.
But I look at
the Dolphins also what, though. I mean, we haven't brought them up. They're also not in a great spot.
No.
Tua and his. I mean, we're gonna have a conversation now for the next 5 to 10 years with Tua's health every year about is this gonna be it? And even then, you watch them. Look, do they beat up bad teams? Sure.
Right.
They lose to a lot of good to average teams. They should not have lost to Arizona.
With Tua specifically.
They had that game.
Yeah.
They are just, I mean, they are the epitome of the bad phrasing of a finesse team.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the Bills are going to kill them this weekend. I think the line's at 6.
Oof, that's going to get up there.
And it's probably going to get up there.
Yeah. And I think, too.
It's a team that maybe doesn't have Terrell Bernard again.
Right. You have Von Miller coming back.
You do have Von Miller coming back.
But I look at the Dolphins, and Tua specifically, I think. I mean, hopefully we've seen his last concussion.
You hope.
Right? Like, I think that...
FanDuel has him at 6.5, by the way. 6.5 point favorites for the Bills. Man.
But I think that the Dolphins are going to play a style of play that really protects him. Now, granted, you always want to protect your quarterback, but it's going to be super, super hyper-focus. Right? Like, it's not going to be this...
Run-and-gun-style offense. But it always has been getting the ball out quick and just
get it to hill and waddle. But now it's going to be even quicker. And I think that could potentially make their offense better, but at the same time, I feel like you when you started this whole thing with Hill and Waddle, it was we're gonna have guys that can stretch the field because they're so fast and then get
speed,
down the field,
you know,
and break past
what team's
people.
Actually gonna be able to deal with them kind of deal.
But now, but ever since the first year of that, it's had to have been, well, we have to get the ball out in half a second or our quarterback might get his 7th concussion. And I'm not saying that in a funny way. I'm saying that because this is a person that has gone through a lot, and I don't want to see him get another concussion. Mm-hmm. He was one of my favorite quarterbacks coming out of college. Like, he was an exciting player to watch. I still remember watching the Alabama championship game when he's a freshman coming in and winning that game for Alabama. It was exciting. It was this young superstar talent that looked great, and then he gets a concussion at the end of college, and it hasn't been the same since. Mm-hmm. And I don't want the Dolphins to be good by any means. I love that they're bad.
I do like the rivalry, though.
But
I enjoy the rivalry.
Yeah, but I also, part of a rivalry, you want to see the other team do bad. And if they're doing poorly, then okay, cool, that's fine. But I think it is a part of me wants that to be, like, you know, interesting. How it was last year, where it was right to the end, you're fighting with the Dolphins for that last...
It was fun, and now you look at the Dolphins, and it's just, I mean, now, not thanks to Tua's injury, but in part thanks to Tua's injury, all the warts on Mike McDaniel's head coach have become bare.
Yeah.
You know, where you have Matt LaFleur and Kevin O'Connell winning games, and their offense looking nearly identical, even when their starters go down, and then McDaniel, Tua goes down, and they can't play the game of football.
Right.
Tyreek Hill didn't score a touchdown for like 6 weeks. Right. I mean,
he was also very vocal about it on Twitter. He was, you know, partially because of the fact that, you know, him and Tua have a relationship. They're friends. Yeah. And, you know, there's that aspect of it, but more so of the hey, I can actually start competing again. I can
start me in fantasy, baby.
Yeah, please start me in fantasy because I'm going to score touchdowns now. And it's like, yeah, well,
but I mean,
I don't think so.
They have looked bad. And it's the same point I've brought up with the Bills in terms of if they won the Super Bowl, what would the national response be? It's going to kind of be the same in the AFC East of they're going to have potentially, because it's also, of course, you know, getting addition picks and comp picks and stuff like that, 10 draft picks this year and more cap space. Sure, are they going to sign guys like Greg Rousseau and Terrell Bernard and maybe even Khalil Shakir? Absolutely.
Yeah.
But they'll still have a little more cap space to play with to add guys. And then they get younger with all the draft capital and stuff like that. It will be a team that feels like they are reloading, already being very good. This was the year, if you were the Dolphins or the Jets, that the Bills are going to win 10 games. We can win 11 or 12. We can get one over them. And now it looks like, I mean, I think Howard picks the Bills, had them at 13-4 today. I probably have them winning about 12.
He flipped the Kansas City game today, too.
Oh, did he?
Yeah. He had the Bills beating Kansas City for the first time this year.
So he has them losing out of the bye?
Yeah. Well,
no, he's had the I have Brighton's chart up. He's had the Bills beating Kansas City a few times. He just has the Bills losing to San Francisco a lot.
Interesting.
When did he?
Interesting.
Last year, or last week.
Last week, he had them losing to Kansas City but beating San Francisco, and then he flipped both of those games.
Hmm.
Interesting that he has them losing out of the bye. I don't know. That's a decision.
Strange.
Simon, good job.
Strange move.
That's a decision. But even that, I mean, you look at the Bills' schedule. We've talked about, like, Detroit's going to be a tough game. Kansas City always. I mean, that's a game I've now just come to just really enjoy.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Because you know it's going to be great television, game. The whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
But you look at Buffalo now. We've talked about it. It's a soft underbelly of the schedule. They beat the Jets. They beat the Titans. They beat Seattle. I think they are going to whoop Miami against 6.5-point favorites. I can imagine that line getting to 7, 7.5.
A great fall day, too, coming up, by the way. 1 o'clock kickoff.
True. Very
like
true.
55 at the kickoff. Oh, so excited.
At Indianapolis, which they can kind of win games. I think the Bills are going to win that one. It's also in a dome. And with what the Bills' passing attack has been able to do, I'm excited about that. Kansas City, we mentioned, bye week. Then San Francisco at home, Sunday night football. We'll see if San Francisco ever gets healthy this year. But until then, I like the Bills' odds there. At the Rams, they seemingly have figured it out now that they've got Puka and Cooper Kupp back. Good on them, because I do like when the Rams are good. And I like how quickly it went from, yeah, they're shopping Cooper Kupp to, never mind, they have won two in a row and they're back, baby. At Detroit, I am terrified for that game. But in terms of a 4 o'clock December 15th kind of day, that's the game of the day. I don't care what the Sunday night game is that week. That's the game of the day. Then you get New England Jets, New England. You should finish out the year 3-0. Full stop, you should, unless you've locked up the 1 seed or the 2 seed.
And you're sitting your starters.
And you're going, we're going to play our starters for a half to finish out the New England game. You should go 3-0 there. But I think now what the Cooper trade has done and seeing the offense these last 2 weeks and also seeing this team be able to deal with health issues, Baylen Specter at middle linebacker in replace of Terrell Bernard for a week looked pretty darn good. You're getting Von Miller back, who is ultimately, look, do I like rooting for the guy? Not really. But in terms of the football player, he's gotten 4 weeks where he hasn't gotten beat up and he's already an older guy and he's already playing well. I think that bodes well for a pass rushing attack that, I mean, the last 2 weeks, Greg Rousseau has announced himself as a guy that needs to get extended today.
He heard everyone talking about, hey, what if the Bills go get Myles Garrett, and said, nope, you already got him.
Nope, you're fine. I may not have the sack numbers. I'm going to have like all the pressures. I'm going to have passes batted down at the line. I'm going to have QB hits.
At the end of the day, it's like getting a secondary assist on a goal in hockey. It's like, hey, you did something, but it wasn't the primary part of the thing, but
we're
still contributed
it,
which is good.
Yep. He had 2 tackles for loss. He had 3 solo tackles, 1 QB hit against Seattle, and then of course the 2 passes batted down right at the line to start the game.
Right.
He was incredible. Also for that week 13 or week 15 matchup against the Lions, the Sunday night matchup, there is Packers Seahawks, and then 2 Monday night games, Bears Vikings, Falcons Raiders. Yeah. Game of the week. 100% game of the week.
Falcons Raiders. Ugh.
The Falcons are a vibe, though. They're fun. Yeah. Raiders, not so much. Falcons, I really enjoy watching them. 803-0550 is the number to call. Zach Jones, Josh Schmidt here until 12 o'clock. You'll listen to the Northtown Automotive Extra Point Show. This is WGR.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated, where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry.
How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Always a highlight of Football Mondays, brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com when Eric Wood joins in on the West Her Hotline, as he is doing right now. Of course, Eric was in the radio booth on the call of yesterday's game, along with our Sal Capaccio and play-by-play man, Chris Brown. Glad to have you with us, Eric. Mike is out sick today, so you're just stuck with me. How are you?
Is he just sick over fantasy football, or... Hopefully not. Just
I can't. I didn't get details. I just knew he wasn't coming. I want to start with something a little silly, if you're up for it, because I saw your tweet this morning about the airport.
Yeah,
and you're a busy guy. You've got these commitments, different media things. So I don't know. Maybe you didn't have a day to kill in the airport. How high? Eric had one of these situations. I should just let you tell what happened. What happened to you at the airport today?
Well, so I was in a pretty delirious state. I had an 11:15 West Coast flight out of Seattle last night, red eye overnight into Detroit. And then I had a 8:30 a.m. flight to Louisville this morning that was overbooking. They were offering two people. It started out at 500, then it went to 1,000, then it went to 1,300. I needed to get back. I had one Bills Live to do at 1 o'clock, mm-hmm. Needed to get back to the family. But from Detroit, that's only a little over a four-hour drive. I was thinking you could take that 1300, rent a car, be home. My car's at the airport, so I can return it to the rental car spot at the airport. I'm not going to lie and say I considered it fully, but I put it on Twitter, like, that seemed like a pretty good number. You know, yes. If you don't have something to do right that day, especially, let's say you're sitting there with your wife and you could swipe $2,600. They come on Visa cards, so essentially, you know, you get $2,600 tax-free. Seems like a pretty good deal.
Yeah, I don't travel as much as someone who's like a big wheel like you. But I've had the announcement. Do they announce the dollar amount, or is it they announce that they are looking for people to change flights and then you go up and negotiate? Like, how does that work? Because I'm having a hard time imagining the person over the public address number going, actually, we'll give you $850.
No, they were announcing it. So.
Wow.
And then you see everyone kind of looking around like, okay, well, who's going to make the first move? Because they said they would only do two.
Right.
So if someone makes the first move, you got to be pretty quick to get the second one. Eventually, I think it settled on 1,300 and two people took it.
Wow. So do they just basically negotiate against themselves? Like, so they started at 800 and then got to 1,300. Like, what kind of time frame are we talking about?
Probably... five-ish minutes. I mean,
wow.
We were right up against the boarding, and they're oversold on the flight. And, you know, a couple people are going to have – the next flight back to Louisville wasn't until 4:45 p.m. So you're essentially giving up 8 hours of your time.
Right. Still a pretty – that's a pretty tasty payout, though, I think. So I don't know. I've had the announcement we're overbooked if anybody was willing to change, but I never heard a dollar amount attached to it, and so I was just curious how that process actually unfolds.
Yeah. And I think it's probably impacted based upon how long you're going to have to wait till your next flight to your destination. But I would go up there and offer a big number. I mean, at this point, I wouldn't be shy throwing out – a pretty high number just based upon how quickly they got to 1,300 today.
Right. Eric Wood on the Western Hotline with us. Bills over the Seahawks yesterday in Seattle. I know, at least I think I know, I heard Chris Brown mention that you did get out for before the game for at least some appearance at a tailgate. What was the scene like there? Because I was not expecting as many thousands of Bills fans in Seattle, just because, you know, it's across the continent. I was really impressed by the turnout.
I was too. I was honestly blown away by the turnout. I'm not going to lie. And I had seen a bunch of social media fans with full flights heading out. You know, I think it was that Toronto direct, you know, multiple days where that was packed with Bills fans. But even then, okay, you have a couple of flights full. What's that? You know, 200 people, let's call it. I mean, there were thousands of Bills fans in the stadium yesterday. I did an appearance for Game Day Buffalo or Game Day Hospitality yesterday, and before the game, and their tailgate. This was 4 hours before the kick. It's drizzling rain, and it was slammed out there. I know there was multiple, like, structured Bills tailgates going on yesterday before the game. So it was fun to see. I saw a bunch of Bills fans at the airport last night, saw some that were in Detroit this morning, whether on my flight or other flights connecting. So it's the Bills fans are enjoying this run that we've been on. And, you know, I'm traveling in and out, whether it's home or away, I'm traveling in and out for all the games. So I get to meet a lot of Bills fans right at the airport. And it's fun to, you know, a lot of the people I met yesterday were, man, I'm the biggest Bills fan, but I live in Vancouver, so this is the easiest one for me to make. Or, you know, I'm in the military and I'm stationed on the West Coast, so this is the closest one
right
for me. Or we've been knocking out different stadiums and we haven't done Seattle yet because we haven't played out here since 2016. And so it's always neat for me to hear all the individual stories as well.
Yeah, awesome. I met a guy 2 seasons ago in Buffalo for that Packers game. I think it was 2 seasons ago, from Vancouver. He was like the president of the Vancouver Bills Backers Association. I'm like, Vancouver, British Columbia. All right, awesome. In my head, I'm thinking he must have been at this game yesterday, although I didn't see any social media from him indicating that he was. Well, that's just really cool. Like I heard their radio analyst, guy that does your jobs, former linebacker Dave Winham. Do you know who I'm talking about?
Yeah, I actually met him yesterday before the game for the first time.
Yeah, and he was on with Brownie and Steve late last week, and they asked him about the scene out there, and he said, you know, guys, the last couple of years, there's been more and more opposing fans. It's not like it used to be, and that sort of got my attention, and I wondered how much we'd notice Bills fans out there, but it sounds like they did a great job.
I was on the field for pregame, and let me preface this by saying generally the away fans go into the stadium before the home crowd. Home crowd's got their weekly traditions. They got their tailgate set up. You know, they're around all their buddies. So, and the away fans want to come in. They want to check out the stadium early. So it's fairly normal for there to be more away fans, or a higher percentage than what's going to end up for the game. But when the teams ran out for warmups, you couldn't tell if it was the Bills or the Seahawks running out. And, I mean, you would talk about getting juiced up as a player. Not that you need any extra motivation for most NFL football games, but it's a good feeling when that happens.
Yeah, I love that McDermott mentioned it yesterday, and I know numerous players also commented about it, which is why I wanted to take it up with you. Eric Wood on the Wester Hotline with us here. Bills improved to 6-2 over Seattle yesterday, 31-10. So the game itself. Eric, I want to start with your area of expertise, or what certainly the position you play. That offensive line is just mashing people.
They look like they're having fun out there, I'll say that. I mean, just highlight blocks, and, you know, some of it is they're putting them in positions on those little bubble screens. You get a Spencer Brown or a Deion Dawkins on a, you know, nickel guy in space, a safety. If the receiver sets them up, it takes a receiver to put that block on you. But those guys are just train-wrecking guys. The run game was going yesterday. If they didn't have those ticky-tack holding calls, James Cook likely over 150 on the ground. And, yeah, they're playing well up front. And I tried to continue to defend the offensive line through the Baltimore-Houston week, saying, look, when you're down 3 scores, any offensive line in the league is going to look bad. It's just how it is. You're getting goofy pressures from defensive coordinators that aren't afraid about – you know, having an unsound blitz and giving up 20 yards when you're up 3 scores. And so any offensive line is going to look pedestrian in those games. But they've put together a great body of work this year. Seems like the Bills made a really smart investment in Spencer Brown at right tackle, getting him re-signed. Deion just continues to play at a high level. And then that interior three, I feel like they're really coming into their own. You got David Edwards going in a left guard, kind of shuffling at that center and left guard spot up front, and it seems like that middle three is really coming to their own as well. And then you bring Alec Anderson in off the bench as your sixth lineman. He plays with a ton of attitude up front. And then you got guys, I mean, obviously not offensive linemen, but it takes everyone in the run game to be able to spring some of those bigger runs. Guys like Mac Hollins, Keon Coleman was...
Dude, yeah, what was...
I don't know what was said to him pregame yesterday. I don't know if the Seahawks said something. I don't know if the Bills said something to him. But whatever was said, let's continue to say that. I mean, he came out and played with his hair on fire yesterday. Obviously, he gets that personal foul when he drives that dude into the bench. But, look, you talk about a rookie earning some respect from his teammates. You take a Pro Bowl corner that's 6'4" and stick his nose on the bench because you blocked him that far. I mean, after the game, I want to sign Kleta to this game. That was awesome.
Right. So, with all that said, Eric, I love what they're doing in the run game up there, and we know that since Joe Brady took over in the back end of last season that they've been a more run-heavy type team. Something else I liked yesterday, though, you mentioned Alec Anderson. They threw out of that. Like, and it's not the first time they did it. They had a nice touchdown to Keon Coleman in the Jacksonville game that I think was out of that as well, with Anderson on as the sixth O-lineman. But even the first play of the game, two tight ends, and here's Dawson Knox. Like, it looks, it's a tendency breaker, and I like that a lot because the Bills have been running on first downs, I think, over 60% of the time on the year. And yesterday, I think maybe 9 of 14 in the first half were first down plays were passes. And I feel like that they have enough faith in their passing game to mix that up.
Absolutely. And I thought it was interesting. Chris Brown interviewed Bobby Babbage for the pregame interview. And Bobby Babbage said at this kind of week 8 mark of the season, you start getting some heavy tendencies where you have to self-scout those and go against them at times just because – you have to understand what your natural tendencies are as a coordinator. Bobby Babbage, first-time play caller, he's got to see, okay, am I starting games off more conservative? Maybe I need to bring pressure early in game, just mix that up. Is Joe Brady getting into this rhythm of run, pass early in games to where we need to start off the game with a shot over the middle of the field where the linebackers are expecting run as well? And so I felt like on both sides of the ball, they came out more aggressive early in this game. It allowed them to get off to a faster start. And, you know, this Bills team, when they've been able to start fast in games, when they've scored first in games, they're are on their first drive of the game this season, they're 3-0 in those games. And so we'll see how that plays out throughout the rest of the year. But when they've been able to get into a rhythm early, it just seems like that continues throughout the game.
Yeah, the fast start was, I think, something that was emphasized, and they definitely got that. 3-and-out, touchdown. How about Seattle? I mean, the Bills had some good fortune in this game, too. Obviously, the botched snap down at the goal line, and then the next series after the interception, good thing Allen got in there and made the tackle, keep that guy out of the end zone, because they ended up going 4-and-out from there when Geno Smith tripped on his center. That was just really bad luck.
It is bad luck. Now, the play you tripped on your center, he's getting tripped up because you have penetration up front. So when those defense,
well, that is something, right?
Yeah, so when those defense, and look, that was something as a center you're always worried about. You're starting to play with your hand between your legs. You know, if they both fire off, if both those guys on either side of you fire off into you and the guard doesn't take some of that, it's really hard not to go backwards when you've got to complete the snap. And so if either of your feet come back and you trip up the quarterback, that's exactly what happened. And so, and not that those defensive tackles are walking up there saying, if I can push the center back, we're going to trip up the quarterback. But they're obviously trying to penetrate in the middle of that defense. And so it was a hell of a stop by the Bills. That a number of high snaps from a seventh-year center. I didn't expect that out of Connor Williams yesterday. But he was struggling out there. And the rain, generally when it's rainy like that, you get a slick ball, and that's where you see some of the balls. The shotgun snaps go low because you can't complete the snap because it slips on you. He was flinging it over Geno's head. Only one goes for a fumble over his head, but there was multiple that were fairly high. And so, yeah, the Seahawks did hurt themselves. These weren't as crucial, but I felt like the Bills, between the penalties and then special teams-wise, really hurt their field position in this game where they ended up racking up a ton of yards because of it. But it also made, you know, drives last longer. A couple of their punts, maybe they're across midfield by the time, you know, they have to make a decision on fourth down. But because of decision making, penalties, whatever it may be, I felt like the Bills hurt themselves field position wise.
I have not seen numbers on this, but it feels to me like illegal formation, two men in motion, that kind of stuff. Not just in Bills games, all over the league, it feels like I'm just seeing more of that. That might just be, you know, me reacting to a moment here, but it just feels like I'm seeing more of that. How can Sean, I'm sure McDermott, he's talking while we're talking, or was, I don't know if he still is going. I'm sure he's being asked about penalties, and it'll be a point of emphasis this week because they've had a couple of games now here pretty recently. The Jet game was like this too, where it was like the most penalties in the league so far this year or something like that. Not just on the Bills, but both teams. Pre-snap stuff, though, what can you do to work on that? Because that just seems like that would be the one. I mean, holding, pass interference, stuff is going to happen. You're battling, you know, and they don't call it all the time. But the pre-snap stuff has got to be really frustrating.
Yeah, that's the stuff that we always say, that's inexcusable. Like, you got to focus, you know, if it happens once or twice because you're trying to get the perfect jump on the ball, fine. But when you're going off on the wrong cadence, or you sent two guys in motion and one guy wasn't supposed to be in motion, you know, that's just being sloppy as an offense. And that's concentration, it's focus, it's preparation, and Sean's going to harp on that. And, you know, I'm with you. The calls are up, it seems like, this year. Now, Chris Brown set it up in the pregame yesterday that the Bills had the officiating crew coming in giving the most penalties in the league so far this season. And they sure lived up to it. I believe there was 32 flags thrown in the game. I'm not sure, maybe right around 20 or so accepted, but I think there was 32 flags thrown throughout the game. There was some offsetting and whatnot, so really crushes the flow of the game, especially from a broadcasting perspective when you're trying to make a point after a play, but the officials got to talk.
Uh-huh.
He's going to cut right over the top of you every time you go to make a point. Well, then you lay out. Well, then they have this 30-second discussion about the play, and now you got dead airspace. So, but all that to say, you know, they got to focus in. Now, when you have these more and more complex offenses, teams are using motion more and more to their advantage these days. You know, if you have won a game, you take it just based upon the fact that you're catching an advantage in so many situations using motion to be able to either compromise the defense, confuse them, not let your guys get jammed up at the line of scrimmage.
Well, that's a good observation. Motion has got to be up around the league. It's become one of those keys to, like, unlocking your passing game, I think. Yep. So coordinators are using it more and more, so it stands to reason with more of it being used, there would be more mistakes while using it. Last thing I want to ask you about, just before you came on, I was talking about what Anthony Richardson did yesterday with the Colts. Did you see this? I know you were traveling and you've had this day, but do you know that in the third quarter of the game, the Colts starting quarterback like tapped out for a line change?
Yes, I heard about this, and I've never seen that. I heard Mark Sanchez make a joke on Colin Cowherd earlier today that, I mean, at least make up that your hamstring was tight.
Right.
just say, well, I got a little tight hamstring. Okay, never mind. I'm good to go. Yeah, I've never seen that. It's pretty common that the six players throughout an NFL game that don't come off the field are the five offensive linemen and the quarterback. Now, sometimes you have your corners play every single snap or Nick, whatever it is.
Right, right.
But as far as the offensive side of the ball, the quarterback and the offensive line stay on the field.
Right.
And so that's not a great look. I would have made something up.
Yeah, right. Yeah, like anything. I'm wondering if he knows how football works. Like, and that's the quarterback of your team. Like, I don't know. It blew my mind when I heard about that.
Yeah, either that or he said he was tired to cover something else up. Like, he had to use the restroom, or I don't know if he got hit and he was trying to cover up a head. I don't know what he was doing. But if he truly was just tired and he was just being completely honest, it's a bad look.
Yeah, it is a bad look. All right, so Miami rolling in here. I would imagine, you know, we're going to be hearing about desperation and backs to walls and those kinds of things. And maybe, you know, conversely, on the Bills side, like, maybe they're a little too comfortable. They got a big lead in the division. Like, how do they stay sharp? Because I think Miami, whatever they're capable of, they will be bringing everything they've got, I would think, to this game, because it feels like their season must be on the line here.
Yeah, they're pretty close to it. And so the Bills got to be ready for Mike McDaniel to throw the kitchen sink at them. It'll be Tua's second start back, likely a little bit sharper than he was a week ago, or yesterday, I'll say. And then that offense looked much better. And it's not like Tua made some incredible plays down the field. That offense just runs a whole lot smoother. when he's in there. And so, you know, the Bills played well down in Miami. The game really got away from him when Tua went out of the game. But Bills had a nice lead before he went out. And so Bills got to take care of business. And it's a week-to-week league. And the Bills, these last couple weeks, last 3 weeks, have been playing some really good football. And so they'd love to keep that going. Look, this is only your fourth time playing in front of your home crowd this year. I know they're excited to get back at home.
All right, Eric, sounds good. Thank you. Safe travels this week, and we'll see you up here this weekend.
Okay, sounds good.
That's our man, Eric Wood. His weekly appearance here on WGR brought to you by Northwest Bank. For what's next, get started at northwest.com. And by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop at northtownkia.com. All right, we're at a timeout here. Phone lines are open. You want to get in on the vibes yesterday out there? If you were out there, feel free to call and share what being in Seattle was like. If you weren't and just were impressed by it, love to hear from you. I feel great today about this season so far. I mean, 6-2. Who would not have signed in blood back in August for 6-2? To start the season. Yes, they lost very likely to the two best teams they've played so far this year, and that can, you know, stick in your craw a little bit, but through 8 games, 6-2 is absolutely a record I would have taken. So feel really good about where they're at, the way the conferences look. I just don't feel like there's anybody that's too good for them right now. So that's a pretty good place to be just about halfway through your 17-game season. 803-0550 is the phone number if you'd like to get in and join the conversation. I would love to hear from you. Sal Capaccio will join the show in about 35 minutes at 5 o'clock, so we've got that to look forward to as well, but your calls are certainly welcomed right after this as we continue. Mike Shope is out sick today, along with Zach Jones. I am the Bulldog, and you're listening to WGR.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it. The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
It'll be good to have him on back. He's been out for 4 weeks and never sure what that brings, right, in terms of staying refined, staying polished. But I'm sure he's been chomping at the bit to get back, and it'll be nice to have him back. And so, you know, again, it's never about one person, right? Especially when you play up front, it's about the sum of the parts, and it's about four guys rushing as one, and that'll be important for us as we move forward as a defense overall.
Bills head coach Sean McDermott, Von Miller set to return to the lineup. Bills and Dolphins, Sunday, 1 o'clock. Temperatures in the 50s, overcast. Jeremy and Joe with you on a Wednesday as we turn the page to the next week. The Bills, of course, 6-2. And the Ravens traded for Deontay Johnson. Steph Diggs' season is over with a torn ACL. Those are some of your NFL headlines. Joe Marino, the Locked On Bills podcast, joins us on the Western Hotline to preview the Miami game, the rematch, and to also wrap up what happened against Seattle. Joe, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Jeremy.
So, Joe, what was your favorite part about the Seattle game? Which was it? I mean, there's the dumb luck, which the Bills had a little bit of that. Seattle had a very, very bad day. But, you know, the Bills made some of their luck and ultimately looked like a dominant team. I mean, Bills fans, I think, came away really happy start to finish.
Yeah, it's tough to narrow it down to one thing because I think there's a lot. But I think the thing that really stands out to me that I'm most excited about is the chemistry that we're seeing develop between Josh Allen and Keon Coleman. Following up his first 100-yard game of the season, the first 100-yard game for any Bills receiver this season, with 5 catches for 70 yards and a touchdown against Seattle. And it's how that production came together. Of course, the touchdown on the 3rd and goal from the 4, a fade route over a good corner in Tariq Woolen, who's like 6'4 with 34-inch arms. I mean, honestly, if you could pick any corner in the league to defend Coleman on a fade route, you'd probably pick Tariq Woolen. You certainly have a heck of a case to be the option. And Keon just wins the ball. And Tariq Woolen's hand was right through it. And he just out-muscled him for it and got a touchdown. And then you're seeing him work from the slot in a no-hitch seam shot where Josh just lays it out there and trusts that Keon's going to get to that spot and go get the football. You saw on the PI that he forced later in the game against Reek Wolin where he was able to beat press coverage with a hard inside step, arm over to get free. He got on top of that corner quick, and Reek Wolin had no choice but to pull him back and interfere to prevent a touchdown. That, and you saw a second window throw on a play action pass that was called back due to penalty. But the point being is the chemistry that is blossoming is obvious between Josh and Keon, and there's a lot of trust that Josh is developing very quickly here. And the plays are really spectacular. He's getting yards after the catch. He's winning in those contested situations. In a lot of ways, he's very quickly become the player Brandon Bean told us he would be for this team. And so it's off to a great start, but it really feels like the last 2 weeks, and especially against Seattle, that piece is what's really, really getting me excited.
Yeah, the Coleman piece, you know, Joe, one of the things we wondered about when the Bills took him, it was a receiver draft, and I think a lot of the receivers are living up to the hype right now, pretty much throughout the first round and into the second round, and Coleman's one of those guys. To me, he's another that represents how there are a lot of different kinds of receivers, and maybe more importantly, there are a lot of different ways to win. He might not be a separator, but he's winning in ways that he can win.
Yeah, there's no question about it. And I think probably maybe the most impressive thing I can say about Keon Coleman is that so far he has 396 receiving yards. 94% of his passing snaps have come on the outside. Among the 53 receivers in the NFL with at least 300 receiving yards, nobody has played a higher percentage of their snaps on the outside than Coleman. Meanwhile, he is number two in the NFL in yards after catch per reception. That's a really unique blend of things. That's not common, right? You typically, if you're playing all your snaps on the outside, those are not favorable plays to get yards after catch. And it's difficult, right? That was one of the things we talked about with Stephon Diggs, is a big portion of his snaps all come as an outside receiver, never in the slot. And those are heavyweight battles up on the line of scrimmage where you don't have that two-way go and you're pinned up against the sideline. And so I think through all of it, and you mentioned he's a unique player, I think that blend of production from wide alignments with yards after catch is really, really unique.
Lastly on him, blocking-wise, how well is that going? Because there were two plays I think we all saw on Sunday, one into the bench, and there was another one where he pointed at, I think, Wolin and then pancaked him. So there was those two plays. Is that going well in general, though, for him, like the rest of the stuff?
Yeah, it's definitely something that he's performing well with, is those stock blocks on the perimeter, which is obviously a big ask of the Bills receivers in this offense. They got a block, and you know, Keon's played the most snaps of any receiver on the team, and that's because of his ability to function as a blocker. And so I think that's been an area of his game that I didn't know how he'd perform. And I think it's going quite well. And you know, you don't drive dudes into the bench and put them on their back and have some attitude towards it if it's not important to you. And I think that's been really encouraging. And I think really ever since that game was at Jacksonville, he was suspended for the first quarter. You know, that was kind of an interesting moment, but maybe it was a real turning point because, man, things have really, really skyrocketed from there.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. All right, Joe, defensively, it looks like, you know, I was listening a bunch of different breakdowns of what happened, and all that Seattle really had in this game was a bit of the checkdown game. I think they missed DK Metcalf a lot, so that's got to be put out there. But otherwise, I mean, Geno Smith, I wrote a quote from him going into the game, how he wants to be blitzed. He welcomes the blitz. And yet, whenever the Bills got pressure, whether it was a blitz or not, like, he dropped back and he did not have answers down the field. There were a lot of dump-offs and a lot of underneath throws because there was nothing available anywhere else.
Yeah, I don't think he attempted a pass that was targeted 20 yards or more down the field. So I think a lot of that was the pressure looks that the Bills were dialing up. They were pretty effective. I know they didn't get a bunch of sacks, maybe just one sack in the game, but pressure was very, very consistent. And, yeah, I think the absence of DK Metcalf absolutely helped the Bills because it took away their best vertical receiver in their field stretcher, which changes all of the spacing. But I think Ryan Grubb, their offensive coordinator, did come in with a plan that was designed to – kind of take advantage of where the Bills have been vulnerable on defense, which is the quick passing game, which is the screens. And so I think credit to the Bills for being a lot more ready for those types of plays. A lot of good, just stay leveraged, drive downhill, make tackles, where in the past, I think that they were falling a lot more victim to play fakes and getting out of their responsibilities. And then you're getting gashed on quick dump offs. And so I thought the Bills were more ready. Their screen recognition was a lot better. But, yeah, I think the layer of not having DK Metcalf certainly played a big part in how the Bills could probably be a little bit more aggressive in that and playing defense that way.
Are you seeing something like when they're in goal-to-go situations that's allowed them to be so strong, especially in the past couple weeks? I know for the season they're ranking pretty good on that front, but the Jet game and then this past week, like before Geno falls, I mean, that's a fourth down, right? Like they've looked pretty strong when they're getting in tight there in the red zone.
Yeah, I mean, it's just coming down to execution. There's only so many different play calls you can call in a short yardage down there. And I think the Bills, their defensive line, if I've noticed anything, they play with great leverage in those situations. And that frees up their second level to run and fill. And it's worked together well. And, yeah, I mean, it's been an impressive situation. And that's like, you know, you could catch yourself watching games and saying, just let them score. Well, no, not at all. I think the Bills have had some very good moments of, you know, Josh Allen makes that tackle. They go first to go from the seven, no points. Thinking back to, was it the Jets game? Taylor Rapp with a big tackle that forced them in a goal-to-go situation. The Bills got out of that as well. So it's a matter of kind of the identity of the defense, which is make them continue to execute, and eventually they're going to make a mistake. And I think that shows up even when you're pinned up against your own goal line.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast. Joe, if there's another trade to be made, and we saw Baltimore make another trade for a receiver yesterday, the Chiefs made a trade for Josh Uche along with DeAndre Hopkins. If there's another trade to be made on this roster, where is it?
I think your most logical spots are defensive tackle, defensive end, and safety. I feel like that's where you can really get upgrades and get reasonable answers that can step in and help you. I think Von Miller's return is going to matter a lot. But you know, you're still seeing a decent amount of Casey Tuhill on the field. Epenesa is pushing 60-70% of snaps. I think there's room for another player on the edge to come in and add to that mix. And then if you do that, I think it does free up more opportunities for DeJuan Smoot, even Epenesa, maybe even Rousseau, to rush from interior gaps, right? So I think you have some space there. And then on the contrary, you could just improve your interior defensive line with kind of strengthening that rotation. And I certainly think there's room for Jones and Oliver to be more impactful this year, but I think the depth can be upgraded. And then will the Bills pursue a safety? And if they did, would they be able to come in and earn the trust and be able to kind of stiff arm Damar Hamlin from being the starter, who I think Damar is a fine depth player. I don't think he's a preferred starter. I don't know that he's the worst player in the world, like I think a lot of the conversation kind of paints him to be, but he certainly feels upgradable if the Bills can find an answer there. You know, I think there's a lot of candidates. Ty Matthew from the Saints really pops for me as an option there. So those would be the three most logical positions to me, and I guess we're less than a week away from finding out if that's going to happen.
The Bills often dominate the Dolphins almost actually every time they play them. Is there any reason for you to think that this Sunday could be different?
Well, you know, you'd like to think that the Bills will handle their business for sure. The Dolphins are obviously not having a good season, tons of injuries on their defense, and you know, but they still have that explosive dynamic with their offense. They're running the ball pretty well. They've had over 150 rushing yards in each of the last three games. And so, yeah, I mean, you got to play the game. It certainly feels like the Bills should handle their business, but it feels like if there ever was a chance, right, that they can come steal one in Orchard Park, something that they haven't been able to do in a long time, you know, you got to make sure you take care of your business here because, you know, this AFC is really goofy, right? I think you have only eight teams that are within a game of 500, which is crazy. Like, that's it. You have the 4-4 Colts, and then it's 3-5 or worse, 9-16 seeds. So this race for 6-7 in the AFC is, these teams, they're 2-6, probably don't think they're out of it. So, and the Dolphins are 2-5. They're one back of like the Colts and two back of the Chargers. So I don't know. I think it's pretty wide open. I'm not sure they're ready to punt on the season. So part of, if they're going to do it, though, they got to go win in Buffalo this week. So, yeah, you got to play the games, but I do expect the Bills to handle the business.
Last thing, Joe, like looking at the AFC, you know, the Chiefs are the Chiefs. We know the Chiefs. The Ravens, felt like for a while there you had a lot of Bills fans that were talking about the Ravens like they were some unstoppable force. Then they go and they lose on the road to Jameis Winston. So was there anything in that game you saw or anything you see from the Ravens where, sure, a positive game script, which of course what they got against the Bills, like they're not a perfect team. They're not some team that can't be handled. And would, I don't know about picking them to lose to the Bills in a matchup, but you'd probably pick a much different game.
Oh, there's no doubt about it. And, you know, I think it's fair. Divisional games are always a little different, right? So that's the Browns. This is a Ravens team that also lost to the Raiders earlier in the year. So they're not bulletproof. They had this moment last year, if you recall. Like, they went and they beat the Lions, like, 38-6.
And they dominated the Niners, too, along the way.
Exactly, right? And it was very much like, oh, boy, this is an unstoppable team. And then, you know, there's obviously the point of they have a lot to prove in the playoffs, right? I mean, I know that they got to the AFC Championship game last year, but, I mean, they got a gift in the Texans after they had their first-round bye to get to Kansas City, and they lost that game. So I think they're a good football team. I'm not taking anything away. I don't think anyone's excited to play the Ravens, but I think the fact of painting them as a wagon, that is impossible for any team to beat. I mean, obviously, that's just not true.
Joe Marino, Locked On Bills podcast, and Locked On NFL Scouting podcast. Joe, thanks, and enjoy the game Sunday. We'll talk next week.
All right, guys. Thank you.
You can find the Locked On Bills podcast where you get your podcasts. Would highly recommend subscribing, making it a part of your day. Locked On Bills and Locked On NFL Scouting. Jeremy and Joe with you. I have a stat of the day. I can get you when we get back. It's on a crazy, crazy good offense in the league, which is doing something that's never been done since the merger. And then they did it again. That's how good things are going in Detroit. Get you the stat of the day next.
Game Day Mentality is presented by Best Self. Best Self Behavioral Health, the official mental health partner of the Buffalo Bills. And with this one, Bills Dolphins on Sunday, the Bills have dominated this series. Under Sean McDermott, they have never lost a home game, regular season or playoffs, to the Dolphins. And they are fresh off a 31-10 throttling of Miami in their own building. Steve, what is the approach of the coaching staff to make sure their players do not go in overconfident?
What the coaching staff will do is essentially remind them how good the Dolphins are with Tua. That game in Miami got out of hand when Tua went out. He's back. They're playing extremely well now offensively. Now, you got to know, too, that this is an offense the Dolphins haven't seen either. They're way different than they were 6 weeks ago, 7 weeks ago, when they played these guys. They're much better and much more well-equipped and, you know, much more experienced than they were at that point as a team, despite the fact that they've got some guys. Amari Cooper is a new piece to this puzzle as well. I think this is a process game. You've got to put your nose on the grindstone and just keep doing what you do. This team is going down the tracks like a locomotive. Do not stop to look out the window. You got to keep going. You got to keep grinding. The Bills seem to be elevating and getting stronger, and the Dolphins, now with Tua back in, they're playing better, but their defense has been ravaged. This is a process game. This is a process game. You don't talk about the big picture. You don't talk about the series with these guys. You don't talk about how much success you've had. None of that goes into this mix. You're trying to play your best and take another step as a team, no matter who the opponent is.
So that is Best Self Behavioral Health's Game Day Mentality. Let's get to the phones at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550, as we would like to know from you, what is going to be the biggest difference for the Bills in this matchup with the Dolphins? We lead off today with Mark in Jersey City. What's up, Mark?
Good afternoon, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I think the biggest difference is everybody says, you know, Tua got hurt, but they were doing a number on him while he was in there. And they didn't have Taron. They didn't have Bernard for most of that game. And the offense wasn't what it is now. I mean, Davis, he was getting run, but he wasn't running as hard and as physical. And last week was a really encouraging side for Cook. He really finished some runs last week, unlike I've ever seen him finish. Like, he put his head down and really road graded some people. And I don't know if you had a chance to look at that Miami defense yet, CB. Oof, I've seen paint dry that was faster. They are lagging. I mean, they're playing Poyer back. They're not playing him like the Bills were using him last year were closer to line of scrimmage, which is better for his point. And the injuries that they have, it can get out of hand fast if the Bills have their heads on straight. Thanks for taking my call, guys.
Yeah, sure thing. There's no question when you look at this at face value and where the Bills have been headed and the Dolphins who struggled to, you know, and lost to the Arizona Cardinals. You know, certainly I think fans are going to walk into this game thing and this is going to be, you know, a jolly day at the park. Division games don't go like that usually. The Dolphins know this team too well. They know what they're up against. There's not going to be any surprises. Certainly Amari Cooper adds something to this roster. Keon Coleman's a different dude now.
He didn't have a catch in the first game.
Yeah. There's all kinds of reasons to write the Dolphins off in this game. Forgive me if I'm hesitant to do that. They are like three passes away from having, you know, 380 yarders away. They've got guys that can do that. And they feel better about themselves offensively now with Tua back, that now they can use Jalen Waddle, now they can use Tyreek Hill, they can get some things going. So I think the Dolphins will feel a little more confident than maybe the Bills would have liked them to be, because Tua gave them that last week. They were pretty good offensively. And I'll say this too. They're maybe the best team in the NFL on third down on both sides of the ball. They're completing third down on offense. They're converting a ton of their third downs, and they're holding their opponents to like almost less than 30%, right at 30% conversion rate. That's going to be a problem. So, you know, there is some things that you can hang your hat on if you're the Dolphins. So I see what Mark in Jersey City sees as well. This is a team that the Bills should put away. But because it's a division game and because there's so much history there and because we know the explosiveness of their offense, I don't know if I can do it.
The other guy that has given the Bills problems and been productive against them is Devon Achane.
Right.
He is a problem. I mean, even in the game up here last year as a rookie, yeah, the Bills win going away 48-20 at over 100 yards in that game. And he was their primary target in the Week 2 game due to the fact that the Bills were playing top down and not letting anything get behind him. And they just kept throwing it to him in the flat. And if he gets a good block and makes one guy miss, he could go the distance. Right. He's a dangerous, dangerous player. Back to the phones and to Tom over on the west side. What's up, Tom?
Good afternoon, gentlemen. On a rare occasion, your question actually fits, or your question fits my question. I'm wondering if Tua is going to have ghosts in his head, because the Bills have given him 1.5 of his concussions in his career. And I'm wondering if he's going to be thinking about that out there, much like the Bills in Cincinnati after the playoff game, after the DeMar Hamlin incident. I mean, I know the Bills were exhausted for that game, but it was in their head that it was Cincinnati. So is Tua going to have that in his mindset? And I'd like to say about Judy, she seems like she's one of those pessimists. I know she's a Bills fan. She probably belongs to Bills Mafia. I don't doubt that. But she's one of those doubters that never thinks the team is good enough, and they always got to get better. The team is never going to be good enough for her to win the Super Bowl until they do it.
Well,
there are people like that. Yeah, no question.
I mean, it's her opinion. She's entitled to it.
And you know what? Fans can be their fan in the way they want to be a fan.
Yeah.
You know?
It's no so, right or wrong way.
It's fine. And everybody's always welcome to call in. And you probably get this too, Brian. Everybody always tells you, hey, I listen to the show, and it's great to hear. And I always tell them my response is, hey, you should call in sometime.
Yeah.
So, yeah, thanks for calling in, Tom. I appreciate it. And Judy's always welcome to call in, too. We want to hear from every band of the spectrum on the show. And I think
we tolerate a wide bandwidth here.
Yes, it's an interesting point. I do not think Tua will give it a thought about.
No, he can't. You can't go out there like that, right?
Players don't do that. I get what you're saying. I'm sure Tua's family might be different, right?
Perhaps.
But I don't think Tua will do that. And like I've said early in the leading up to when Tua came back from this latest injury, you feel too good after a concussion to like retire like that. You just feel fine. And that's why guys come back too quick before they really are fine. And given Tua's, you know, was a month and a half or a month or so before he, you know, took the field again and he went through the protocols, and they're much more aware of that these days. I think he can feel fine with him coming back. Played extremely well last week, and I can I would imagine he feels good about coming into Buffalo. I don't think that it's happened to him twice against Buffalo.
He's been knocked out of the game three times by the Bills in his career.
Right, and this last one, I hate to say it like this, but he kind of knocked himself out of the game.
He did it to himself.
He kind of did it to himself.
But you have the Milano hit,
right,
which was a concussion but wasn't diagnosed as one. And then in 2021, A.J. Epenesa gave him a rib injury when he absolutely nailed him on the third play from scrimmage and knocked him out of the game there. So three times he's been knocked out of games by the Bills, all of them down in Miami, mind you, but I'm not saying he won't think about it, but that's really not how a player, especially a quarterback, can go into a game. He just can't go in thinking like that.
I don't think – it's an interesting thought, though, and I hadn't put that together, but, yeah, Tom makes a good point there. I don't think players think about injuries in the same way you might think they do, like the fans do, particularly Bills fans, because we've seen it three times, right?
Yep. Let's go to Joe in Snyder next. What do you got for us, Joe?
How you doing, guys? I hope everything's all right. I called last year about my brother, and we just wanted to thank you for your good advice. If you recall, he married into a large family out west. The way he speaks about the Bills is, we did that, we did this. Well, they did an intervention on him. And said, you know, you're just a large man sitting on the couch drinking beer, eating nachos. You're not actually a Buffalo Bill. And your advice was, take those people out to Buffalo to the game. Show them what it's all about with the Bills Mafia. And I just wanted to, he wants to thank you guys. I want to thank you for that great advice.
Oh, so did they go ahead and do that? And did things change?
Yes. Yes, they loved it. They thought it was terrific. Anyways, the question I got for you guys, after the divorce, he moved down to Texas.
Hold on a second. Hold on a second. So he brought these people in to a game to show them what he's passionate about. They had a great time, and then there was a divorce?
I'm afraid so, but we don't blame Steve about this, okay?
Okay.
So anyway,
after the divorce,
He's dating these two women in Texas, and it's reached a point where he's got to decide one because they kind of have wind of each other. Both of them, they're very, very nice people. I've seen pictures of them. They're very presentable. They're both accomplished. One is from Thailand. She speaks four languages. Owns her own restaurant, terrific cook, has a complete disdain for the Buffalo Bills, for American football.
Oh, wow.
She doesn't want to hear anything about it. The other one only is from Venezuela. She's wealthy. She only has about four words of English. She loves American football. She loves the Buffalo Bills. She watches it with the translator on TV. Which way would you guys go? I'll hang up. Thanks for your good advice.
Okay. Joe, this is a challenging one. This is a challenging one for the football relationship hotline.
This is almost a hypothetical.
Oh, there's nothing hypothetical about this one.
Right. Yeah.
Look, relationships very often are built on things you have in common, because if you're spending a lot of your time together, which in most cases married couples are. There are exceptions, you know, different work shifts and things like that. But you want to have things in common so there are things you can enjoy together. And I think what you have to consider is, do you have more things in common with the Venezuelan girlfriend who you know likes football, or do you have more in common with the woman of Thai descent or of Thai culture who does not like football? If you got to put a pro and con list together here. It can't just be about the football. It's got to be about other things too. And if you're having trouble deciding, put together a pro list and a con list in terms of things you have in common with that person. And if the pros outweigh the cons, that's probably the person you got to side with here. Talk about playing the field, man.
Wow, dude. Yeah. Well, the last time we gave you advice, it.
He's thanking us for it. Right, he's led to a divorce.
Right. I'm like,
I don't know if I want to be thanked.
You're coming
for that.
Back to us for advice. Well,
that is the one time we.
I got to echo what Brownie said. It can't be just about the Bills.
Although it should be on the list.
Yeah, it's on the list with a lot of other things that are also important in life.
Pro and con list, best way to go.
Pro and con list. And, you know, remind your brother, if and when he does ever get married again, you got to work hard at it all the time.
Yeah.
You got to work hard. Marriage is hard work, but the reason you stay married is because it's worth it. At some point, it's all worth it. So you got to keep working hard at it. And so that's my advice.
Best of luck.
Let
us know how it turns out. I want to know who wins. This is like an international match. Venezuela versus Thailand.
Man, oh man.
Who knew?
We already took a big loss after we brought him to a home game.
Wow. Oh, that was a good one.
There was a lot of layers to that onion. A
lot of layers. We have to take a break. We'll get back to the phone calls in a moment here on One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Things change there. So I think right now, sitting back and seeing a veteran that's done it at a high level for a long time, you can develop that way as well. McKinsey, you go through that process and learn.
Indianapolis coach Shane Steichen. Joe Flacco goes in for Anthony Richardson Sunday night at Minnesota. The Bills are in Indianapolis next Sunday. 803-0550 to join us. What is the most promising sign about the Bills season so far?
I would say the most promising sign, well, I mean, their record is excellent. 6-2. It's not the best record, but it's a very good record. Their point differential is good. That's also good. I think the most promising sign is what the passing game has looked like the last six quarters or so. I don't know, all of last week maybe doesn't need to be included because they kind of cruised through the end of the game. But back half of the Tennessee game, the start of the Seattle game, I just felt like the offense was flowing through Josh Allen again. And I know I don't expect that to be every week, but with the emphasis on running the ball that is backed up by their choices and certainly how they sound about it, I felt like I don't know if I was gonna say a switch was flipped, because I think we could be in for a run heavy game any one of these weeks. I mean, if they can run it well against Miami, maybe they'll just run it like crazy against Miami like they did in week two. But I feel like the passing game, since really the Baltimore game, the Houston game, even the Jet game, which they won, I was like, too much of it was just Josh out of structure, running away. Like, the only big plays they got were kind of broken plays. And I feel like the last couple of games here, it looks more like a proficient NFL passing offense. And I really think they're going to need that newsflash. I think they're really going to need it later on. Or even to get through this season winning 11 or 12 games. So I think Cooper's arrival coinciding with that might make you want to claim it's all Cooper, like he's drawing coverage or something, and maybe there is some of that happening. I mean, that's a theory that should work. I just feel like their passing game is really encouraging right now. Coleman's emergence, I think, is really promising.
Yeah, Coleman individually might be my answer. I don't know how big a role, though, he plays. I think he plays a role. But with Amari Cooper and all the other things they've done and can do, I don't know that Coleman is like exactly vital to what happens this year, but he's been fine. You know, like, I thought there were, a lot of people did, question marks about the player, but he's been fine. You know, just big plays, and they haven't really needed him to be a lot more productive, which is good because he's a rookie and you shouldn't assume that or expect that. Exactly. I would say also I might pick like the secondary. I think we knew that the corners were good. They've been healthy.
Mm-hmm.
Safety with the turnover, and who knows what the pass rush is. Von Miller, I had no expectations for him going into the season. He also missed four games to his suspension anyway. But if you can't get pressure, then it doesn't matter that you have Josh Allen on your team watching from the sideline. Like, what happens over the top? What happens to your defense, you know, where it really matters? And they've held up. I mean, the Bills' defense has absolutely held up with injuries and with these questions about what they would be. So that's good. I mean, I think I always said, you know, this year and other years about the teams with the best quarterbacks, the floor should be like 500 or even a little better than that. And that is how I felt about the Bills. But if your defense completely falls apart, then that can be wrong. You know, that's one way where it's only so valuable to have
a
great quarterback, great offense
this year.
A little bit, yeah. Questions about Baltimore in this area too at this point, yep. Even though they have a good record. So there are plenty of promising signs. And of course, the division is a part of it. Like, this is really, and this is to me the most surprising thing of all of it. I'm not surprised that the Bills are 6-2. I'm not surprised that the defense is making it. I'm not surprised that, you know, the offense seems fine. I am surprised that they're 4 wins ahead of second place before Halloween.
Yeah.
And that we've already started to have conversations about what to do with that. Like, now you don't do anything, and we'll see if that it could go to 5 this week. I mean, the Jets have a tough opponent. The Dolphins come here. The Patriots are the Patriots. It could be 4.5, 5 game lead going into week 10. And I don't know. Is there anything you do about that when it's week 10?
I don't think so.
You're playing for the one seed.
I think you just got to keep going. You know, at some point we'll get to the conversation that we've been sort of, you know, I don't know, just sort of poking with a stick already for more than a week. And it came up yesterday again. Like, you know, when do you consider, you know, what are the stakes? What's the value of, obviously the one is valuable. 2, 3, 4, okay, how do you feel? How strongly do you feel about those? I don't think they're all the same, but, you know, you might be motivated to sit guys down. I guess it depends on how early they clinch, which, again, could be early, maybe reminiscent of 88 when they clinched against the Jets in, that was November, wasn't it?
It was late November.
Yeah.
I will look that up. I was there.
So, you know, but even then, just because you've clinched the division, if the one is still there, if the Chiefs drop a couple and you get them here in a couple of weeks and get them, you beat them, and now you're in a race. And I'm going to have to keep going there, I think. As long as that's realistic, I'm going to have to keep going.
November 20th, 1988. The Bills improved to 11-1 and clinched the AFC East that day. Then they lost 3 out of 4. And they should have been the one seed 10 different ways that year. They went to Cincinnati the next week. They lost to Cincinnati the next week. Then they lost to Tampa Bay 10-5.
Mm-hmm.
Yikes.
Yep.
Beat the Raiders. And then that, I mean, sorry, but tragic loss at Indianapolis. The day after Cincinnati won its game to give them hope for the one, that Chip Lowmiller game against Washington, Jamie Morris, overtime, the Bengals win, but still, you know, the Bills are 50-point favorites against the hapless Colts, and they lose that one. So, ends up going to Cincinnati in the AFC Championship. Why did you have to mention all this?
We have a job to do, that's why.
Why did you bring up 1988?
It's all connected. Well, yeah, because it's that. My recollection was that was a really early clinch.
And yeah.
It was.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. And I don't know if anybody's mindset changed, but they did lose.
Yeah, right. I don't remember who played and who didn't or anything like that. I have no idea.
I don't think anything like that happened.
Right.
I mean, they still had a stake the whole way, but all right, let's try to shake that off. Here's Zach with us. Hello.
Hey guys. I guess on the other side of the coin of this discussion here, you know, tell me if I'm being too nitpicky, I guess. I'm still kind of waiting to see like a Kincaid game. You know, I feel like we've already seen, like, a couple Coleman games. Cook's had his own game. Shakir's is always good. Like, And I understand Kincaid is getting in the end zone and he's scoring a bit, and I'm sure he's doing stuff that I don't see. I'm not reviewing tape every night or anything, but I don't know. I guess for as much as they kind of touted him as this excellent pass catcher, which he is, I still feel like I'm waiting for, I don't know, like, for lack of a better term, it's like an epic game from him. Mm-hmm. You know, that would kind of catapult him into the top tight ends in the league. Like, I would not put him anywhere near, like, a Kelce or even, like, you know, you look at an Isaiah Likely has even had his own game at this point, and he's only been around for, did he just get drafted this year or last year? But I don't know. Again, I think I'm being nitpicky, but I'd like to see a little more out of Kincaid. And I guess, like, so, yeah.
Okay, thanks. I mean, I've said the same thing many times. I talked about this last week with JSN on the Seattle side, and both guys for first-round picks drafted near each other, you know, where's the pop? Like, there really hasn't been much of a pop yet. But I think at this point, this is what you say when they're winning, I guess, but I think at this point, it's what it is. It doesn't revolve, and this is probably, not even probably, this is how it really should be, but it's not revolving around his draft status, you know? There's not this forced attempt to justify picking a second tight end with your first-round pick last year, which would be dysfunctional. I always think on some level, you know, if there's synergy in the organization, that's where you'd like for it to end up and not have it look like, well, geez, what? Did you have to do that? Mm-hmm. Couldn't we have used speed, you know, instead or whatever mm-hmm. we would have yeah. said last year or this year? But the offense is functioning. Knox exists. Knox is still playing a part in their passing game. He's on the field a lot. They want to be more of a running team anyway. He's a part of that. You have other slot receivers. There's only so many snaps where I think you can have Kincaid. And then what's the target share after that? So I agree. It would feel good. It would feel good. But I just think it's kind of working. Yeah. I would guess. I would think that they would say that.
Yeah. I'm just looking at Kincaid's, you know, game over game here going back into last year. And he, you know, he did have 10 receptions and a loss in Cincinnati, 81 yards, so modest for 10 catches. 87 yards against New England in December on New Year's Eve, 84 yards in the clincher against Miami last year. Playoffs were modest. And then you've got this year, and where are we at this year? What's his biggest game this year is 52 yards against Tennessee,
right?
On 3 catches. So yeah, I mean, it just has not been that game. And I think the caller's right, but it's receiver versus Coleman's had that game already. He's at a 100-yard game. Kincaid doesn't even have a 100-yard game yet, but it's a tight end. I mean, it's not as common certainly for a tight end to have that kind of day, but yeah, I mean,
well, how is Coleman getting there? Like, it's busted plays, you know, that's not his fault. But the Houston touchdown, right, last week, a couple of times, it's just like a broken coverage, and you're getting, I don't know if you have it, but like 40-yard plays, 40 to 50-yard plays from Coleman.
Mm-hmm.
And he's just going to be more likely to do that than Kincaid is, don't you think?
Yeah. He's going to be one-on-one on the outside and, yeah, break a tackle and you're out of there. And Kincaid's going to always have to be dealing with more traffic, so the yak is going to be likely different. I like the talent of the player, certainly, but you're not out of line wanting more there at all, I don't think.
57-yard play against Tennessee, I guess only 25 against Seattle, but Coleman has had a 24-yard catch or greater in 6 games already, 6 out of 8. Pretty good.
Yeah.
That's been very encouraging. So far, that looks like a win. 803-0550, thanks for the call, Zach. Getting connected with the fans, brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com.
Odyssey celebrates Veterans Day, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Season 2 of The Sunshine Place is the story of an experimental drug rehab for teenagers called Straight Incorporated. Where kidnapping, brainwashing, and torture were disguised as therapy. It's the origin story of the troubled teen industry. How do I know this? Because I lived through it.
The Sunshine Place, an Odyssey original podcast in association with Robert Downey Jr. and Susan Downey, is available now on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.